Let's take our Bibles this morning and open to 2 Kings chapter 4. 2 Kings chapter 4. Music was wonderful today. Nice to have Nancy back on the piano for the offertory and for the special. Choir did a great job. Congregational singing was good. Did I cover everybody? Okay. 2 Kings chapter 4. Title of the message this morning, A Woman Who Is Blessed by God. The record of the Shunammite woman who lived during the time of Elisha is found in two chapters of 2 Kings, chapter 4, verses 8 through 17, and also 2 Kings, chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. For some reason, the Bible doesn't see fit to give us her name, but she is here so that we can remember and see her godly character. And she's an example of how we can trust God no matter what difficulties we might face in our lives. And as God sent her blessings, so he can send them to you. There'll be 7 points in our outline this morning. First of all, she was generous with what she had. We see that in 2 Kings chapter 4. Let's read verses 8 through 10. And it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunem, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, Behold, now I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick. And it shall be, when he cometh to us, that he shall turn in thither. This woman showed kindness and hospitality to Elisha. She and her husband lived in the village of Shunem. It's a few miles southwest of the Sea of Galilee. It's in the valley of Jezreel, or Megiddo. And this was a time in Israel's history when there was a lot of idolatry, Baal worship. God had told Elijah, though, in the cave that there had been 7,000, there were 7,000 in Israel who hadn't bowed the knee to Baal. And Elisha traveled to three schools of the prophets where some of these 7,000 met to learn about God and how they could serve him. Elisha lived in near Mount Carmel, and when he traveled to these schools, he would pass through Shunem. The Bible calls her a great woman. Greatness here probably means she was well off financially, because the text tells us she was generous in helping Elisha. It's not important how much we have. What matters in God's sight is that you recognize that all he has given you is really his. And we would all do well to have the attitude that everything we have belongs to him, and we are just stewards of what he gives us. We can be generous no matter how great our bank account might be. This woman told Elisha to stop in and have something to eat whenever he was going by, when he was passing through. In verse 8, it says that she constrained him to eat bread. She was determined to help. She wouldn't take no for an answer. I learned also in the between the lines here is that Elisha didn't invite himself for the meal. He had to be urged to come and to continue to come. Notice also her generosity was tempered by spiritual discernment. She recognized that Elisha was a holy man of God. We ought to pray for that kind of discernment. There are people in ministry today, missionaries, evangelists, and we ought to pray for and support them as long as there is in their lives this unmistakable testimony that they walk with God. We need that kind of discernment to make sure we invest in what really matters. And also, notice also she was faithful in her worship. Later in verse 23, her husband asked why she's going to Mount Carmel, because it was not the new moon, it was not the Sabbath, a normal worship time. And in the time of idolatry, again, when the majority of Israelites were worshiping Baal, she was still faithful in worshiping the one true God, Jehovah. No matter what happens in our world, let's remain faithful to worshiping him. Let's continue to do that. She and her husband added a room to their house. It says on the wall, you say, well, that's a lot of furniture to just put on a wall. One writer says she was more spiritually sensitive and outgoing than her husband, but notice he's the one who goes along with this guest room project. It was built, it says, on a wall, probably meaning the room was built on the flat roof as they had access to those roofs. It was a great place to have an extra room. But the stairway would be on near the wall, a private entrance where one could come and go freely on the external side of that wall. She thought of what he might need. And if you're providing a place for a missionary or an evangelist to stay, here's a great checklist for basic provisions. There's a bed, a place to rest or to sleep. A table, a place where he could eat or study at. A stool to sit on, a candlestick. This would be technically a lamp to get around in the darkness, perhaps to read in the late night hours. Now, some churches have had or have prophets' chambers. You may have heard of those kinds of things. The idea and the name comes from this text. And so she was generous with what she had. Secondly, she was content with who she was. We see this in verses 11 through 13. And it fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Call this Shunammite." And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, "Say now unto her, Behold, thou hast been careful for us with this care. What is to be done for thee? Wouldst thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the hosts?" And she answered, "I dwell among mine own people." She was asked what she could be repaid for, or what she could have in return for the kindness that she's shown. Elisha was the one who told Gehazi to ask what would she have on her list of things that she would like. The suggestion was made that since she had been careful with all this care, would she like to for them to put in a word of commendation to the king or the captain of the army. Here the idea is that she took a lot of trouble providing a place for them to stay, for him to stay, and food to eat. Now, some think the commendation may have been perhaps special protection by the military, the soldiers, or even for her husband to be given a position in the kingdom, a political kingdom in government, an important place. But notice what she answers, "I dwell among mine own people." What she's saying is, "I keep to myself. I'm content not to have any notoriety. I have everything I need." This answer was one that showed, indeed, she was content with what God was doing in her life. There's a verse in Philippians chapter 4, verse 11, where Paul is telling us how he learned to be content. Contentment is something that we can teach ourselves or God can instruct us in. And he said he got to a place where the circumstances of life didn't affect his attitude of contentment. Whether he was hungry, whether he was full, whether he had a lot of things or a little things, he could still learn contentment, the secret of relying upon the providence of God, knowing that he would provide for every need that he had. Contentment is not found in getting everything that we think we need. True contentment is found in knowing Christ and in trusting in a God who knows our needs and will provide for those needs. So she was content with who she was. So we've learned these two characteristics of her already. She was generous. She was content. And now we come to the point where it shows that God blessed her. She was blessed in a miraculous way in verses 14 through 17. And he said, "What then is to be done for her?" That's Elisha talking to Gehazi. And Gehazi answered, "Verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old." And he said, "Call her." And when he had called her, she stood at the door, in the door. And he said, "About this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son." And she said, "Nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thine handmaid." And the woman conceived and bare a son at that season that Elisha had said unto her, according to the time of life. Well, Gehazi was the one who noticed that she had no children and that her husband was old. Now, this conversation, again, is between Gehazi and Elisha. It's not the kind of thing that would be said in front of her, or especially not her husband, okay? He's old. Notice that God gave her what no one else could. She probably wanted to have children, but this was another area of her life where she was content with what God brought into her life. And it's good to come to a place of resigned contentment in knowing that God does what is best. He always does what is best. And what he gives and what he withholds from us is in his perfect and sovereign plan. Elisha prophesied that she would have a son within a year. Her response shows that she wasn't opposed to having a child. Every wife in Israel wanted to have a son. And this would be the kind of thing this would be an unkind thing. And she says, don't lie to me. It would be unkind for him as a prophet to say. And God answered and gave her a son within a year, just as Elisha had prophesied. At point four, another characteristic, she's generous, she's content. And now we see that she was submissive to what God did. Her son died. The details are in a larger section, verses 18 through 24. And when the child was grown, it fell on a day that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said unto his father, my head, my head. And he said to the lad, carry him to his mother. That is, he said to a lad, one of the young men who was there helping them reap. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. And she called unto her husband and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. And he said, wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It's neither a new moon nor Sabbath. And she said, it shall be well. Then she saddled an ass and said unto her servant, drive and go forward. Slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee. Don't husbands love it when their wives say, drive as fast as you want, as fast as you can. Okay. Now it happened when the child, notice, was grown at the verse 18. The wording seems to indicate that he's old enough to go out on his own into the field where his father and the others were reaping. And then we have that phrase, it fell on a day. There was just this certain day. Everything was normal until that day. The events of one day can change everything in a life. Many of you experienced those kinds of days. The boy probably had a stroke while he was in the field with his father. Some say it was a sunstroke because it presents itself that way. The boy cried out about his head. He was in this harvest time. It would have been hot. It would have been sunny. He was carried back to his mother, who held him in her lap and cared for him until noon when he died. And the wording in several parts of this story and in other parts of Scripture relating to this story show that he really had died. It was not a resuscitation. It was a resurrection from the dead. Instead of telling anybody, she laid him on the prophet's bed. Even in her grief, there remained the spark of hope. She may have thought about the miracle that Elijah saw when God raised the son of the widow of Zarephath. And she decided to go ahead and see what Elisha's God could do. She called her husband, asked for a donkey and a servant to take her to see the man of God at Mount Carmel, and then return. She did not tell her husband that the child had died. She just asked for the young man and the donkey so that they could go and get Elisha. It was about 20 miles from Shunem to Mount Carmel. It would take perhaps 6 to 7 hours to walk. With the donkey, that distance could be covered in probably half the time. So we get an idea of the time frame that all of this takes place. Her husband asked her why she was going, since it wasn't a holy day. She said, it shall be well. She uses the word shalom, peace. She'll say the same thing to Gehazi in verse 26, it is well. One commentary, Dillard, writes, faith is continuing to believe in the promises and goodness of God. Faith is considering it certain that God will be true to his word. It is knowing that he is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine. It is well. I don't understand what the Lord is doing, but I trust what he does. It is well. As I read those words, I can't help but think of the hymn that Horatio Spafford wrote. He lost a son and much property in the Chicago fire. He decided to get away, and he went to Great Britain to help D.L. Moody and Ira Sankey in an evangelistic campaign. He sent his wife and four daughters ahead so that he could finish up some business. Their ship was struck by another vessel and sank within 12 minutes. His wife sent word back to him that their four daughters did not survive. And the song that came out of that tremendous loss has resonated with many who have found God's grace sufficient, able to sustain them through difficult times, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me. Remember Paul said, I have learned to be content. Whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul. And oh, that we would get to that place where when we face that dark valley of our life, we would be able to say, it is well. She went to find Elisha in verses 25 through 28, we read, so she went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass, when the man of God saw her afar off, that he said to Gehazi, his servant, behold, yonder is that Shunammite. Run now, I pray thee, to meet her, and say unto her, is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child? And she said, it is well. And when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet, but Gehazi came near to thrust her away. And the man of God said, let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid it from me, and hath not told me. And then she said, Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me? Interesting here, she doesn't share that news with Gehazi either, just like she had kept it from her husband. He tried to keep her from falling on Elisha. She probably fell at his feet and was grasping him around his ankles. And Gehazi tried to stop that. And Elisha allowed her because he said her soul was vexed. And he uses the word vexed, that's the word mara. What does mara mean? Do you remember? Bitter. Bitter. She didn't tell Elisha why she was there, and God hadn't revealed it to him. And then she asked Elisha, did I desire a son? Did I not say, don't deceive me? And all of her concern that she first had about having a child is coming back. She didn't have a son before. She was content, had learned to be content. She's saying now, I told you, don't get my hopes up and then dash them. And this is what I was afraid of. And we come to another section now. She's been generous. She's been content. She's been submissive in this tremendous difficulty that she's facing. And here again, she was blessed in an unusual way in verses 29 through 37. God, who miraculously allowed her to have a son, did what was impossible for anyone else to do, and her son was brought back to life. At first, Elisha sent Gehazi back with his staff and instructions in verse 29. Then he said to Gehazi, gird up thy loins and take my staff in thine hand and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute him not. If any man salute thee, answer him not again. Don't let anybody keep you from or delay you from this task. And then he said, and lay my staff upon the face of the child. The woman wouldn't leave Elisha. We see that in verse 30. The mother of the child said, as the Lord liveth and as my soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And he arose and followed her. And here we see her persistence. The Bible says a lot about asking with persistence. It was Jacob who wrestled with a man until the break of day and said, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. And God changed his name from supplanter to prince, Israel. And he says, because as a prince thou hast had power with God and with men and hast prevailed. And we need to be prevailing and persistent in our prayers. It was Jesus who told the parable of the widow who kept coming to a judge and asked him to avenge her enemy. And he told her to this end that men ought, or he told that parable so that he said, to this end that men ought always to pray and not to faint. And so we ought to be persistent like she was. Gehazi did what Elisha told him to do. In verse 31, he passed on before them, laid the staff upon the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him. And as he went, returned back to Elisha and told him, saying, the child is not awaked. So Gehazi passed on before them. He went to Shunem first. He did everything Elisha told him to do. Dillard, again in that commentary, says the staff may have been emblematic of the prophet and his office, a visible token that he was on his way. But it says there was no voice, no hearing. He was unresponsive. Elisha arrived and saw that the child was dead in verse 32. And when Elisha was come into the house, behold, the child was dead and laid upon his bed. Here again, a statement that the boy was not alive. And now the miracle, verses 33 through 35. Elisha prayed and God answered. He went in therefore and shut the door upon them twain, just Elisha and the boy's body, and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and lay upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands. And he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. And he returned and walked in the house to and fro and went up and stretched himself upon him. And the child sneezed seven times, and the child opened his eyes. The prophet identified with the problem. Too often, men of God lived isolated lives from the problems of others, not Elisha. He was earnest in his efforts to see what the Lord would do. Elisha called Gehazi in verses 36 and 37 and told him to call his mother, the mother. And he called Gehazi and said, call this Shunammite. So he called her. And when she was come in unto him, he said, take up thy son. Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. What a display in this chapter of the omnipotence and the undeserved grace of God. God is able to give and sustain physical life. And every day that we wake up and take a breath, we ought to think, God has a purpose for me. The next time someone sneezes, thank God for life. Will you seek to show what his purpose is for your life in the every day that you live? Will you be able to put your head on the pillow at night and say, God did some things today, and he used me, and I'm thankful for that? Or will you continue to live life for yourself? God is also able to give eternal life to every soul who's dead in trespasses and sins. And if you've never experienced the miracle of the new birth, he invites you to come to him by faith. Trust him and be saved. Oh, but there's more to the story. Let's turn ahead to 2 Kings chapter 8 for our last 2 points. We'll go quickly. She was generous. She was content. She was submissive. And now she was obedient to what God said. 2 Kings chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. Then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, arise and go thou and thine household and sojourn wheresoever thou canst sojourn, for the Lord had called for a famine, and it shall also come upon the land 7 years. And the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. Elisha warned about the famine to come, and he describes this woman as the one whose son he had restored to life. Another testimony, this was a miracle. Elisha warned her that this famine was coming. Notice at the end of verse 1, the Lord hath called for a famine. God's in control of the weather. He's in control of everything. And he had told Israel if they were obedient and didn't worship false gods, that he would send rain and the crops would be productive. And if they were disobedient and served other gods, he'd withhold that rain and increase. And so this is probably that famine because of that. It's also probably the famine that was in the land back in chapter 4 when the prophets gathered gourds to make stew. He told her to find a place that wasn't affected by the famine and move there. Arise and go. Sojourn. The word sojourn means to turn aside from the road at a place to stay. From your journey, take a break. Remain there. Dwell there. And he told her to take her household. God had worked a miracle in giving the son back to the Shunammite, and she's going to take that son with her. She had a reason to trust God to take care of her family now as well. Can you look back at God's hand of provision and guidance in your family? Your obedience affects others, and so does your disobedience. So stay on course, keep obeying him. Her response, she did what Elisha told her to do. She traveled about 60 miles to the southwest into a land of the Philistines. Here the Philistines weren't a threat anymore as they used to be, and other Israelites had already gone into that area, were living there. When we come to the last point, she was blessed by God yet again in verses 3 through 6. Her property was restored to her with interest. Now, the record of Elisha in the book of Kings is not in chronological order. And this account of the Shunammite woman, Gehazi is sitting down with the king, Joram, the king of Israel, and he's telling what great things had happened during Elisha's ministry and life. And this account in 2 Kings 8 must have happened before Gehazi became a leper. That was in 2 Kings chapter 5. So here, in verse 3, she makes a plea for her house and land when she got back from that seven-year famine. Verse 3, and it came to pass at the 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines, and she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. She's probably asking for permission to purchase her property back that she had owned before. The law under Moses had established that property would always stay in the same family, the original family. The timing of this request was providential. I love the way this story unfolds as we look at verses 4 and 5. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, "Tell me, I pray thee, all the great things that Elisha had done." And it came to pass, as he was telling the king how that he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman whose son he had restored to life cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, "My lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life." Joram was asking Gehazi to tell him these stories. Bible Knowledge Commentary says his interest in Elisha seems to have been motivated by curiosity rather than conviction. There's no evidence that Joram ever abandoned his apostate ways and became a faithful follower of the Lord. Whatever your motivation, people are curious to see how God works. How did he work in your family? Tell me what things he had done. And sometimes God will use that to draw them to himself. But providentially, here the woman and the son came in just at the moment when Gehazi was telling how this woman's son had been brought back to life. Isn't God's timing amazing? It's always perfect. And her land was restored to her, verse 6. And when the king asked the woman, she told him, so the king appointed unto her a certain officer, saying, "Restore all that was hers and all the fruits of the field since the day she left the land, even until now." So 7 years of produce that she wasn't even responsible for bringing was restored to her. The king appointed an officer. Remember, this is a time of apostasy. Israel's living in rebellion against God, and Israel was reaping the results of that sin. And Joram the king had no regard for the worship of Jehovah. God is not limited in who's in office or who's above you in authority. Just continue to obey him. And he promises to supply your needs, and that promise is not hindered by any political landscape around us. She was given her home and her land and all the produce. As I think of this story, I just think and I pray, may the Lord help us to be like this Shunammite woman. Generous, content, submissive to what the Lord brought into her life, even though she couldn't understand it. She knew it would be well. And obedient. And God blessed her over and over again. May we look to that same God for for the same kind of blessing in our life and answers to prayer that he can still provide. Let's look to the Lord in prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for your word. And I pray that today we will learn from this account of this woman who had great tragedies in her life and yet great blessings. And through it all, you answered prayer. And I pray that you would help us to see that you're still the same God and you can work on our behalf. And so help us to be faithful, to be obedient to you, to be generous to others, to be content with what you bring into our lives. And I pray that we'll be able to see the hand of God in our lives as well. We ask in Jesus' name, amen.